Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more from around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, and just in case you're feeling a little radio shy, you can always email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E at AOL.com. Before I introduce my co-host for tonight, I would like to mention that the time is running out to join into our healing weekend that's going to be happening October 3rd and 4th. We have women who are coming not only from this country, but also from Scotland, from Canada, and all parts of this country coming to Philadelphia in our united desire to start healing and start that process, validating who we are and what we've gone through. And there is nothing more validating than being in a room full of women from all over, room full of women, and just knowing that everybody knows exactly what you're feeling and you never have to say a word. We have some really great speakers who are coming to this conference as well. So there is no cost for the conference. We have a group rate for the room that's still good till September 16th. And so if you are interested, once a year I'm doing this. And if you need that healing, call me or get in touch with me now at writing to me to at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be happy to get you set up for that. So for right now, I would want to introduce my wonderful co-hostess that comes and joins me once a month, Mrs. Suzette Vernon. Hi, Suzette.
Hi, buddy. How are you?
Now I can call you Mrs. now, right?
Yes. I tell people, just call me Mrs. Z because they get the Vietnam part so mixed up. So I said, just call me Mrs. Z.
I don't know. That sounds a little sexual there. They call me Mrs. X. You're Mrs. V. Can I just call you Mrs. Suzette? Is that good?
That's good.
Okay, good. Yeah, so welcome back to the show. I so much appreciate your being here and uplifting the spirits of our women every month who tell me how much they love listening to you around the world. And I was really excited because I just checked the stats before I dialed into Blog Talk Radio. And this past month alone, there were over 3,600 people listening to the shows. And
wow.
I think that's really incredible, which is why, you know, I keep doing this week in, week out, month in, month out, because I know a lot of women, this is their only connection to reality for their reality that they're living in. They don't know anyone else going through this. They don't want to talk to anybody else about it. They feel embarrassed and ashamed. And so the only thing they have to clutch on to sometimes is this radio show. So, ladies, we are here for you, and we're here to try to make you feel better, even if it's only for the hour, right?
Oh, indeed, yes. Indeed, yes.
And I would like to say for those women, and this is your only contact, we both understand how isolating the situation is. And even though I'm older than Suzette, I'm not lots and lots older, right?
No.
All right,
no,
I'm a decade ahead of you. But I know that when I was going through this, I felt like I must be the only one in this situation. Did you feel like that too?
Yeah, I felt so weird, so strange. You know, like I was walking around, you know, pretending to be somebody that I wasn't. And I didn't feel like I could really come right out and say what was going on because then it would make me very odd, very strange. And people didn't take it very well when you start saying, I suspect that my husband is gay. Folks look at you like you got four heads.
Mm-hmm. Like there's really nobody can really sit back then, you know, because it's been a while for both of us. But,
yeah.
You know, before computerization, there was practically no way to find out or access information about this. You had a hope that once a year that something would come up in a magazine or on a TV show and hang on to every word saying, oh, I'm not the only one going through this. But ironically, even all these years later, and I know that you've worked with some of our women, I really, as your job as a coach, I really find that even though it's 2015, that women still feel, you know, isolated and alone. They don't know other people who have gay husbands. They think, oh, I must be the only one. Because there's just not enough real information out about this, right?
It's really not. And I've even noticed, like, even on social media, when I post that I'm going to co-host with you the Straight Wives radio show, and I put what it's about, it's almost like you just hear silence. You know, it's like crickets, you know, it's like you're talking and all of a sudden there's just this dead air. And I think people are not really ready to really have that conversation. Not about the
Even though I'm sure some of them are living it, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I've had some people that have talked to me privately about it, but some of them, they were really glad to hear that I had been through it, and they were willing to talk with me privately about it, but it's still a stigma attached to it.
I think that, especially with, like, the church community, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it's not just the church community. I think the black community as well.
I'm not sure of all the black community, but certainly in the South, right?
Yeah,
and the island black community, right?
I haven't dealt as much with the island black community, but here in the South, my experience has been that it's not something that you really talk about that much.
I know. I got into an argument one day with somebody over this on another radio show that was a black, you know, show. And they had invited me to be on their show. And I just couldn't quite grasp or get a handle on why there was such anti-gay feeling in the black community, because certainly as a community that has suffered discrimination and knows what it's like to be made to feel abnormal or not worthy mm-hmm. of or less than, why would they support other people feeling like that? That was always an issue to me.
Yeah. Well, you also think, too, if at least the South, in the area that I live in, is the Bible Belt. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, and especially because most of the black people that I know, even if they don't go to church, there is a very deep history when it comes to the black church. And as you know, there's a lot of us that look up to the black church because of Martin Luther King and all that, and a lot of the movements that have caused great strides for our people have happened in church. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
during slavery, church was the only place where you could express yourself. So I can understand from a cultural and historical standpoint why the black church has such high regard and has such of a deep reach when it comes to black people. But at the very same time, there are also a lot of issues with rigidity.
Exactly.
Because of it as well. And I think that's probably why, you know, you might have found that. It's like there's certain things that were stigma, suicide stigma. You know, I remember when I was young, and I remember telling my mom one day I had an emotional moment, and I said, you don't love me at all. And I started crying and just, and she went and she got the belt and gave me a good whooping and said, how do you feel now? Because back in that day, being emotional was considered what white people do. Black folks don't do that. So it's a lot of things that kind of go into why people think the way they think. It doesn't make it right at all. You know, it makes it really behind the times. But we have a lot of misinformation with our people, a lot of rigidity, a lot of things like that.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, there's the whole Christian movement, and that's why it's so hard for so many of our wonderful women who have gay husbands to reconcile the fact that they're not supposed to stay with them because they took their vows so seriously when they got married under, you know, the church and God's will, and they're the ones who have the hardest struggle with understanding how this could happen, or they feel very much at fault because their husbands married them and this was, you know, the way God wanted it. You know, God comes into a big picture play here with Christian people. But as Dr., you know, Brian Hooper always says, and he's a pastoral counselor, that it wasn't intended for women to live in these kind of marriages. God would not have wanted that.
I totally agree.
Right?
Because, you know, I was one of, I grew up in a Christian home, albeit very dysfunctional, you know, but when I say Christian, I put my quotation marks up because it was not Christ-like. It wasn't Christ-like, but it was very biblical, very rigid, very legalistic, very Pentecostal holiness. So I understand so much what the women out there are struggling with when it comes to, because I think the struggle is because we really want to be true to our faith and we really want to please God. And so when you've been told, you know, indoctrinated with certain beliefs, and even a lot of them have been taken out of context, you still want to do right. And so it is very difficult to reconcile.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, your husband is gay, but then you've taken vows for better or for worse. So it's very difficult, and I know exactly how they feel because I had to go through that myself. I had to get to a point where I realized.
I understand that, too. I really do, and that's the problem, because when you make the marriage vows, you know, you take it for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. And I think that's where so many Christian women get hung up, thinking that gay is a sickness. and not realizing that this is not a curable sickness. I mean, it's you can abstain from it and become what I call, you know, a dry gay, like a dry alcoholic.
Yeah.
And there are gay men who try doing that, but that doesn't make that mean that they're happy because they're living a life that wasn't destined for them to start with. And I just feel that women should understand it is for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, but it is not for straight or gay. God never intended the husband to put the bout or for straight or for gay in there, right?
Yeah, I don't believe that if we were to look at the basis of our Christianity, and the basis of our Christianity is that Jesus Christ died that we could have a life more abundant. Well, you're not having a life more abundant being married to a gay man. You're really not. You are electing to stay in a prison that you were never meant to live in. And my God cared enough about me to break me out of that prison. So,
well, here's another thing. You know, and like I say, not being a Christian, but maybe you can explain this to me. When you get married, and the Christian women who come to me are very strong in feeling badly because they are Christian and to be breaking these vows. And I understand that, believe me. My heart does go out to them because they take it very seriously, which is the way marriage should be taken. But if homosexuality is against Christianity, wouldn't those vows be invalid anyway?
You know, you made a very, very good point, and I hope the radio listeners are listening to that, because if they're really basing staying on vows taken, then if their husbands are quote-unquote lusting or want to be with someone of the same sex, they've already checked out. I can't even get my words together. They've already violated those vows. That's what I want to say. They've already violated those vows even before any divorce or separation. You know, so you have a very valid point. Very valid point.
Right, because Christianity doesn't even acknowledge homosexuality except as being wrong. So why would anybody be expected to stay in the wrong marriage? I mean, that to me is the best argument, right?
You made a great
point. If that makes sense to you, I'm saying as a non-Christian.
But, I mean, you make a great point. You make a very valid point. I think the whole thing is when you really believe, if you really believe that God loves you, and you really believe that he wanted the best for you, and went to great lengths to redeem you back to himself, then why would he be okay with you after going through all this trouble to free you, all this trouble to redeem you, jump through all these hoops to get you back, and then after doing all that, consigning you to live the rest of your life in misery? It doesn't
make much sense to me either, right?
Exactly.
So that's why I think that people have to really rethink this. And trust me, I'm not Christian, so I don't know, but I come from the same tribe as Jesus does, and I know that he was a very loving, giving man. And he would have never expected anybody to have to suffer this way.
I totally agree. And another point, too, Bonnie, since we're talking Bible, you know, especially we of African-American descent in this country, that's the same Bible that they're quoting when it comes to their husbands and marriage is the same Bible that says, slaves, obey your masters. And the thing about it, for years, we were kept in bondage.
That's right.
With people using the Bible out of context to keep us ignorant and keep us bound. But yet some people who believed in God heard a greater message. They heard a bigger message. They heard a message of freedom. They heard a message that said, no, we're not cattle. We're not animals. You know, they heard something that wasn't ever read to them in that Bible. They heard the voice of God. And as a result of that, we are now enjoying freedoms to the extent that we did not have before. So people have to really weigh out the fact that all Christians agree, if God is not dead, then he can still speak. And if you keep him held and bound to a Bible, then you really are doing him a big disservice, because he's bigger than a Bible.
Exactly.
He's bigger. And you cannot hold him captive to one book as if that's all he's ever had to say.
Well, I'm hoping that some Christian women will hear this conversation, and it won't change your situation as far as your husband, because he's not going to not be gay. He's going to be gay, and he may not act on it temporarily, but he'll be thinking about it and wanting it and resenting you if you stay there, and feeling that you're the one who's making him do something he doesn't want to do. So now that we're talking about it, you can see some of the rational reasons why this would be okay if you're a Christian. If you're really staying there for God, then God wouldn't want you to stay. Then it's time for you to go.
Exactly.
I think that's the message.
Exactly.
God wants you to have a happy marriage with a man who's straight, like you're a straight woman. You weren't destined to have to live a life with a gay man and take the abuse and the emotional disconnect while you're wondering every time he's 10 minutes late through the door who he's with. That's not the way life is meant to be lived.
Or you feel lonely and you don't know why. But you feel vacant, distant, cut off, isolated, loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's torture.
Exactly.
It is torture.
And that's why it's so important to stop letting yourself stay in these marriages a day longer. Like, I had a woman who called me yesterday, and she said, well, I stayed here for my children. I said, well, I don't know anybody who would tell you to stay in it was an abusive marriage, too. You know, emotionally, mentally calling her dirty names, having nothing to do with the kids. And I said, I really don't know anyone, a therapist, who would tell you that it's healthy to stay with the children in that situation. I said, you say you're staying there for the kids, but is he good to your children? She says, no, he doesn't bother with them at all. She says, but at least they're not from a broken family. I said, they're living in a broken family. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
She says, well, I made my vows. I said, well, now it's time to break your vows. You know, some people are just very resistant, which brings me to the next thing I wanted to discuss with you. I had a guest on my show several times this past year who I just am in total awe of her. And her name is Dr. Margalis Velstad, and she's the author of a book called Stop Caretaking, The Borderline Narcissist, and Take Your Life Back.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a therapist who works with people who are quote-unquote caretakers. And she has a wonderful monthly newsletter for anyone who wants to be on her newsletter list. And there's lots of wonderful information in this newsletter with wonderful articles on how to kind of put yourself back in shape, how to believe in yourself, how to start healing, increasing your self-esteem was one of the issues for this week. And I know that you work with women all the time. And I thought this is really an interesting and important topic, because we lose so much of who we are when we are with somebody who we don't belong with.
So true.
Isn't that true? So there was an article that just came out by Savannah Gray, and this was in the newsletter for Dr. Velstad. And if anybody is interested in getting her monthly newsletter, just let me know and I'll send you the link. But it's called The Relationship You Have With Yourself, The Most Important Relationship of all. And it starts out by saying, imagine that you were in a relationship with someone you didn't love. Imagine that you found this person to be flawed, worthless, and just not good enough for you. Now imagine that you couldn't leave the relationship, you were stuck in it. What kind of relationship would that be? How would it affect your thoughts, your behavior, and your everyday life? For many of us that grew up in shame-based homes, where the message we constantly received was, you're not good enough, The relationship that we've come to have with ourselves is based exactly on that message. When you believe that you're not good enough, you feel incredibly uncomfortable in your own skin, and the most comfortable spending time with people who encourage that discomfort. I could draw up thousands of stories from my childhood that exemplify these feelings in action. For instance, there was a time in grade 7 where I wrote the best speech for speech arts and I was in the finals. I had always been pretty outgoing and I had the better speech, but I didn't win. Why? Because I sabotaged myself. Subconsciously, those familiar feelings of not being good enough surfaced. And while up there in front of everyone, my body started to sway back and forth and shaking. One could say I was nervous, but I wasn't. I really couldn't explain why I did it, except to say that it was my belief manifesting itself in my unconscious behavior. In all competitions, sports, music, you name it, I was usually second or third, but never first. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I believed I didn't deserve to be first, even when the competition was based on tasks where I had more natural ability than others. So here's some quotes that she was thinking. If you think you are beaten, you are. If you think you dare not, you don't. If you'd like to win but think you can't, it's almost certain that you won't. If you think you'll lose, you've lost. For out of the world we find, success begins with a fellow's will. It's all in his state of mind. If you think you're outclassed, you are. You've got to think high to rise. You've got to be sure of yourself before you'll ever win the prize. Life's battles don't always go to the stronger or faster man, but sooner or later, the man who wins is the man who thinks he can. And that was from a book called Success Through Positive Mental Attitude. When you carry around the message that you don't believe that you're enough, you will create obstacles for yourself far greater than any life could create for you. I often wonder how much simpler life would have been for me if I didn't carry around that burden. I often looked at successful people and wondered why they had that and I didn't. I often found myself being critical of others because I could see their flaws, yet they were still allowed to be successful, and it baffled me. And she goes on and on, and she talks about some other things. So before we go in any further with hers, tell me, how do you feel about that so far? Do you think that's true?
I do think
that we become self-fulfilling prophecies to ourselves of destruction.
Yeah, I think, you know, I really believe that before anybody else can betray us, we first have to betray ourselves. And so to her point, it's what you believe about yourself that causes you to teach other people how to treat you. Because you have to first believe that you're worthy, that you are valuable, before you will ever hold anybody else accountable to treat you differently or to command their respect. So it's very, very true. It's interesting that you read that because it kind of reminds me of an interview that I had not too long ago with a gentleman by the name of Stéphane Labossière. He is known as Atlanta's relationship guy.
Uh-huh.
And he's also been featured on Huffington Post Live. And one of the things that he was saying, he said, you know, because we were talking about women and men relationships and what causes men to disrespect women. And he was saying that it's not our femininity. You know, a lot of times we think our femininity makes us weak and everything, and especially those of us who are in the workforce. And he said that's not it. He said the issue is we make rules and we break our own rules. He said men look at us as being wishy-washy. And the thing about it is I know before I understood that, you know, you think that if you love someone or you want a man to know that you are a good woman, you're a caring woman, you know, that you're not mean-spirited, that you're compassionate, that you're open, a lot of times he'll tell us something and we might not like it, we may not agree with it, but then after a while we'll get by ourselves and we'll think about it and we'll say, well, you know what? you know, well, maybe I shouldn't be so hard, or maybe I should try to see things through his eyes, or maybe I should, and we end up discounting our own feelings about it or what we need out of the relationship. He said that's what men don't respect. He said we don't have standards. He said you should have a standard by how you want to be treated, and you should not give them a pass on your standard. And I said that because I'm saying when it comes to our self-esteem and it comes to how we first think, you know, we don't think well of ourselves. If we don't think well of ourselves, then the men that are in our lives are not going to think well of us either, because we're going to always keep dumbing ourselves down. We're going to always keep accepting more and more abuse, more and more neglect, just because he gives a reason. We'll just keep dumbing ourselves down, trying to be, you know, agreeable, trying to see the other side, trying, you know, to make it work. So we should just put our foot down and say, no, you can't treat me this way. And hold him to it.
Exactly. And we don't. I mean, we just keep thinking, like this woman was telling me, well, if I can only fix him, I said, why don't you work on you? Why don't you work on fixing you? Because he's broken, and we can't put, it's like Humpty Dumpty sat on that wall. When he had a great fall, the horses and the men couldn't put him together again. There were 40 billion eggshells all over, and that was it. And the same thing with these men. If they're broken men, and hers wasn't necessarily broken because he's gay, he had a lot of other issues. But, you know, he had a lot of issues that were very broken. And I said, why would you think that you're the one who could change everything that he's gone through in his life? Where would you be so presumptuous to even think that? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think that takes a, I mean, there's no humility base there if you think you can change someone who's that. And she said, well, I thought the love of a good woman. I said, no, it doesn't work that way. They don't care about the love of the good woman. They only care about themselves and feeding themselves with whatever they can feed themselves to make themselves feel better. That people have to know how to walk away from bad situations, and instead of just staying there and having them over and over again and getting hurt. But yeah. I do want to say to you that a little more about what this article says and see what you think.
Okay.
It says, as an adult, the belief that one is good enough isn't something that anyone can give you. It's a realization that we need to awaken within us. It starts by becoming aware of the problem. When we are aware of it, we can then watch it in action in our thoughts and our behavior, witnessing it like an unbiased spectator. When we realize that the relationship that we've been having with ourselves is toxic, then we can also recognize that many of our relationships with other people are born of the same cloth and take on the same patterns and frequencies that we've become accustomed to. We can't have a healthy relationship with anyone while we ourselves remain unhealthy. Once we gain awareness, we have to start changing our internal messages. Being kind to ourselves is something very difficult for codependents to do. We are so used to taking the blame for everything, and that belief that we weren't good enough is so deeply entrenched in our psyche, but we have to start the process by changing the message. When we've gained the awareness of what we're doing, we have to always be mindful of just how we are processing the information that's coming to us. When your partner starts to yell at you, say to yourself, what am I feeling? Hurt? Responsible? Why am I feeling this way? I think everything is my fault. Let's try to look at this from a different perspective. I don't deserve to be yelled at. The blame doesn't belong to me. There is nothing that I've done to deserve this kind of treatment. There is something wrong with someone who overreacts like this. Not something wrong with me. I just made a mistake. So what? I'm allowed to make mistakes and not get yelled at. Keep being mindful of what you've let in and now can and how to interpret the data coming to you. Look for those individuals around you that are successful and notice that they aren't perfect and realize they don't have to be perfect to try anything, do anything, or be anything. Recently, I watched a commercial for plus-size lingerie. A voluptuous model came out prancing, but nothing but bra and panties. She was far from the tiny standard of beauty society tells us to desire. but I couldn't help watch her and think she was the sexiest woman I'd ever seen. What made her sexy was her own belief that she was sexy, and it showed the way she moved and carried herself. Suddenly, her non-conforming size wasn't an issue because she didn't let it stop her. You give yourself permission to do the things you've always felt that you would die of shame from. You'd be surprised at just how liberating this exercise can be.
Mm.
How do you feel about that?
I think she's very right. I do. Mm-hmm. I do. You know, because, I mean, let's face it. Those women who are still in situations with their gay husbands, the problem started before they married the gay husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just another one of the symptoms that led up to him. The issue is, if you got, like she said, you got to fix yourself, because the thing about it is, it's not being married to the gay man that made you unhealthy. You were unhealthy before you married the gay man.
I think in most cases that is true.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say in every case, but I would say in a lot of cases that is absolutely true.
Or at least there was a predisposition toward accepting treatment that was not healthy.
Exactly, because in the beginning, I think a lot of women are really fooled, because these guys can be very narcissistic, many of them, very charming. They can really trick you into marrying them, thinking that you're going to have a wonderful life together. But that's part of the narcissist behavior that many of them have. The thing is that I don't fault women, and most of us do come from some kind of obstacles in life. We didn't have good role modeling on what family life is really like. And, you know, we came from broken families or families, drugs and alcohol, or families with all kinds of other dysfunction. And even though women are very successful who come to our, you know, in our part of our Straight Wives Club, as far as career success and financial success, the internal success is really what it's about. Because even if you didn't know when you got married, you knew something was wrong, not all the way down 30 years later. You knew something was wrong before this. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. And my thing is, like, Bonnie, even though it goes to what you're saying, even if a woman was fooled going in, her staying still is her call.
Uh-huh.
And if she is justifying to herself, for whatever reason, the children, the whatever, if she's justifying to herself staying in that situation, then it's no longer about him. It is about her and what she is willing to live with or even try to make herself live with, which goes to the point of the article you were reading. We have to get ourselves straight. You know, this thing about thinking you're going to change your husband, I mean, whether he's gay or not gay, how many women that we know will tell you, you cannot change him? He is who he is. And so my thing is, if you are allowing yourself to not be treated in a way that you dream of being treated, that you wish you were being treated, you have to first give that to yourself. Because the truth of the matter, the person who's waiting to be treated right, is you, waiting for you to treat you right.
That's exactly right, because you can't expect to understand what love is if you do not love yourself. You may think what you're doing is love, but it's not. It's neediness and codependency. For those women who want to say, I can fix this, and they're going into a relationship under the assumption that, okay, it's broken, but with enough, and believe me, I'm not pointing any fingers, so I was the first to do that in my past. I was always the first to say, okay, so he's broken, but guess what? I'm going to show him what a wonderful wife and a wonderful woman. I'm going to support him emotionally, you know, if I have to financially, however he needs my help. And he's going to fall in love with me and be the man I've always dreamed of. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
Oh, honey, I thought I could pray us into a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I thought if I prayed hard enough, fasted, you know, went to the altar, cried, had hands laid on me. You know, I thought, you know, I could do it. I thought, oh, goodness, so whatever's not right in our relationship, all I have to do is pray to God, and he's going to help fix it. That's what we think.
And we really think that we can fix these situations. And also the fact is that, you know, when we were growing up, not my family, but when other families, most of the time people did stay together.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, whether the marriage was good or the marriage was bad, they were just stuck there, and they always used to say stuck. And that was called being stuck because people did stay together. It didn't mean they had a better quality of life. And my parents, I think, were one of the first divorced. They were the first one divorced when I was growing up because it was 1966, and people just weren't getting divorced back then. So we were like a stigma then. Now you, Suzette, you're like a stigma being in a happy marriage. Like people don't really see that happening because they're so used to seeing, right? They're so used to seeing broken marriages.
Exactly, and my message to them is, you know, because a lot of times, like we've talked about before, people feel like, you know, well, I may as well stay in this. And some of their girlfriends might even tell them. They might even say, girl, you better stick with what you got because ain't nothing out here. And I say, liar, liar, pants on fire. There are some good men out here, some good men who are waiting for someone to notice that they are a good man and they have such hearts full of love to give. Such hearts full of love. But we have to first love ourselves enough to recognize. Because when you don't love
yourself. You know what I think it is? I think you're wrong, Suzette. I think you have to love yourself enough to accept that there are, quote, good men. I think the problem is that as caretakers, we're always looking for the men who aren't the good men. The men who we can change and fix them up. Because we don't love ourselves enough.
So I hear you.
You know, I always tell my students that I teach, you know, my GED students, that inevitably, you know, people who drop out of high school, and, you know, I'm dealing with hundreds every year, you know, they're the caretakers of the world. I always say, how many people in here are caretakers, always taking care of everybody else's business? And it's like 95%. And they're all shocked when they all raise their hands. And I say, do you think this is a coincidence? Because it's not. When you don't feel as good as the messages are telling you didn't finish high school, what do people think of you? You know, and I say, what names do they call you? They say, dummy, quitter, this, that. And I said, yes. And those are the internal messages you start feeling. I said, but the truth of the matter is that a lot of people have a piece of paper that you don't have, not because they're smarter than you, because they stayed longer than you. So I think a lot of the same thing here. I don't think it's like women can't find good men. I feel that if you don't learn to love yourself, you're not going to be looking for a good man. You may say you're going to want somebody good, but you're not going to feel good enough to get somebody good.
I don't think you're going to feel secure
enough with a good man because you're always going to be afraid he's too good. I don't love myself enough, so this guy's not going to really want to stay with me. And I think that's the problem. They'll look for somebody broken because they feel they can handle that better.
And to be
honest with you, Suzette, look how long you waited to meet the right person. You had to build yourself up and start your career and go to school and do a million things. Am I right?
Yes, I did. But you know what? Sometimes we do those things to compensate, you know, to compensate for what we feel like is missing. So all those things did not help my self-esteem when it came to relationship. What helped my self-esteem when it came to relationship was I started working on me. I stopped making my husband, my ex-husband, what he did to me. I stopped focusing so much on him and blaming him for my predicament. I had to get to a point where I was tired of hearing myself say the he done me wrong song. I was sick of hearing it. I was sick of him having that kind of power over my life. And I started looking at what I wanted, and I knew I couldn't do it on my own. So I started looking for help, Bonnie. That's the truth. You were one of the people I looked like. I went online and started Googling because I needed some help. I needed some help lest I should lose my natural born mind. So I started looking for help for myself. I stopped making him my focus. And that's one of the biggest things when I'm coaching ladies and men actually too, who are ladies who are dealing with, you know, they might still be in the situation that they want to leave, or they just left the situation. Or I've met ladies who have done very well, very successful by all standards.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they find out that you were once married to somebody gay, it is so hard to shift them from making everything deferring back to him. For everything, deferring back, always looking back, always blaming back. And I have to tell my clients, listen, we got to get this car out of reverse. We got to get this car out of reverse. I understand what you've been through, but it's not about him anymore. What are you going to do now? What are you going to do about you now?
Mm-hmm.
Let's concentrate. What do you want? Not what he did, but what do you want for yourself going forward? That's where we got to put our emphasis. And it's very, very common because people are so used to their story. They're so used to it, and even though their story has merit, when you want to heal and move forward, you got to lose that story. You got to tell it a different way. You got to see it through different eyes.
You have to tell it with a different ending, for sure.
Yes,
you have to tell it like it's your past and not your current or not your future.
Exactly.
Understand that takes time. Believe me, especially when you're left a single parent with nothing and you have the responsibilities of everything hitting you and some of these social issues that women have to deal with their kids and their exes and their boyfriends and narcissists and sociopaths, you know, trying to kidnap the kids. You know, there's so many complexities here, but at some point you're never going to be able to move forward if you don't allow yourself to move forward. You just have to start building yourself. And even though you tell me that school wasn't for this, every time you achieve something, it builds your self-esteem. Every A you would get, or just going back to school, making yourself feel better that you can do something when so many of us have been told for so long we can't. I think that getting a job, keeping a job, going to school, taking a course, creating something artistic, anything to just make yourself feel better will add to your self-esteem, don't you think so?
I think it will add to your realizing that you can make it without him. But your self-esteem, that you have to pay attention to, because I don't care how much. There are so many women out here that have achieved so many wonderful things. But when it comes to men and relationships, they are scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
And so even in that, even in all of, and I think what you're suggesting is at least make a step. And I totally agree. Make a step, because that will help you to realize you can live without him.
Mm-hmm.
It will help you to realize that you are stronger than what he says you are. But if you want to heal yourself from the scars and the wounds to your self-esteem that were inflicted because of the relationship, you have to focus on that with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You really do. You really do.
I think this is where maybe there's a difference in the technical terminology between self-worth and self-esteem.
Mm.
Maybe these other issues build self-worth, but it may not exactly be the same as self-esteem. And I still feel you can't really have self-esteem until you love yourself. And that doesn't mean that if you go to school and take courses that you'll necessarily love yourself, you'll feel better about things. But you have to find what it is within you that you can feel really good about. Because if you can't find that, then don't expect some guy to come along who's going to feel good about something you don't even know what's good about you.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many predators out there, and I'm not talking gay, I'm talking about predators. Who are looking to prey on loving, kind, wonderful women. So
well,
having had
a
gay husband, you just are a likely candidate.
Well, I have to kind of tweak that part about loving kind women. Because the thing about it is, if we are loving kind healed women,
right,
loving kind healed women, then you cannot, then there is no blood in the water. There is no blood in the water. And I think part of being a loving, kind woman is being loving and kind to yourself.
Exactly.
Most women, despite their self-esteem issues, if I were to bump my toe and break my toe, whether my self-esteem was good or not, I'm going to the doctor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for many of us, we have a broken heart. Sure, it's inside, but we've got broken bones inside. So why is it that we have a broken leg, you know, we get a broken toe, something happens, we'll go to the doctor
mm-hmm.
to get that straight. But our emotional health, which is just as important, we won't go get that straight.
And I agree with you, and that's why the job you do as a life coach is just so amazing. And I don't think a lot of women understand what life coaching is, because if they did, I think more and more would be going there. A lot of times people go for therapy and they go for counseling, and I think that's good to some degree. I'm certainly not against it, trust me. But I think that many people don't realize there is a difference. And for mm-hmm. some of our women, after they go through therapy and they get their lives back on track, they really do need life coaching, because sometimes you've been out of the workforce for 25, 30 years. Sometimes you're having frustrations of being a single parent and how to handle it. And this would be a wonderful job for you to go to a life coach with, or, you know, wonderful mm-hmm. situation, because a life coach doesn't deal with your past. She deals with your present and your future. Am I saying that right? Because I don't want to misquote anything.
Oh, you got it, Bonnie. You got it. Because I liken it to this. I think therapy and psychiatry and psychology and all of that definitely helps us to resolve the issues of our past that keep us stuck in psychic pain,
mm-hmm.
unable to truly function because we just are stuck in the angst and the trauma of it. So, yes,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely necessary to have
to make
that.
Your next step. Right, to make your next step.
Yes, because it helps you to get yourself back. But then
mm-hmm.
once you've gotten yourself back, now you got to move forward. Where do you want to go?
Moving forward can be really complicated. Really complicated
sure
for a lot of our women. Because
sure
as I mentioned, they may have been living in an abusive situation for a long time. They may hesitate before they take a move because they're afraid. Do you think that's possible?
Mm-hmm.
They're like paralyzed into an action.
And the beauty of coaching is, you know, I know because I truly believe that coaches need coaches. And so I'm still being coached. And so what I love is the fact that in my coaching experience, especially when I went to a relationship coach, one of the things that vital pieces that we provide is also information. Because, like you said, sometimes if you've been stuck in a way of living,
mm-hmm.
you don't know quite how to navigate this new world to get where you want to go. You don't know what healthy looks like. And so
exactly.
part of what a life coach and a relationship coach can do for you is help you by giving you the objectivity. When you're going extremely one way or extremely another, they can help give you the balance. They can
mm-hmm.
show you what's healthy, and you start learning things that you didn't know before. They provide you with resources and information, and then coach you in the practicality of walking it, of making it part of your lifestyle. So, yes, coaching is very vital.
I do want to mention something, Suzette, so people don't have a misunderstanding on there. A coach is on your side. A coach
oh,
is
yeah.
looking for you like a baseball coach or a football coach. They want to show you how to win a game. And, of course, the game is life. But a coach
yeah.
is not going to impose his or her values on you and say, you should do this.
Oh, no.
Am I right?
Oh, you're very
That's
right.
That's not what coaching is about. Coaching is about helping you find what you want to do for yourself and maybe just giving you some suggestions for direction on how to get
just
there in a better way.
Yeah, helping you stay accountable to what you say you want. Because they help you in the beginning, they help you to get clear. Because a lot of times people come and they tell you what they want. They'll say, I just want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a coach, we help you to get clear of what that looks like to you.
Mm-hmm.
What would happiness be for you? And then we help you to design a pathway so that you can walk toward that, and we hold you accountable to it. And we also help you to navigate the distractions and the pitfalls and the challenges. So that you can continue to move forward. So, yeah, we are your champion and we're your accountability partner.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in business and industry today, you know, coaching is a big issue because of just workers' behaviors. And, you know, it certainly is on a personal level that people really need to have coaches to help them move in a certain direction that they may not be aware of how to move there.
So,
I've done that wonderful little blurb for you, Suzette. Let's try this again, how people can get in touch with you.
You'll be happy to know that I still have www.suzetterhinton.com. However, I also have www.suzetterhinton.com. So all roads lead to me.
Well, that's good, because if you're listening to this broadcast, you can see Suzette's whole name, Suzette Virnon, and just put a .com, and that
that's
will lead to her also.
Is
and,
that better, Bonnie?
You're getting there. I'm waiting for SuzetteMyCoach.com.
Baby steps.
That might be coming soon. But really, Suzette is the most wonderful coach. I know women who have gone to her and feel that their whole life has changed. And you don't have to be in the Carolinas to see her. You can be coached by phone, by Skype, any way that's convenient for you. Sometimes
Indeed.
You always feel bad, well, I wish I lived near her. You don't have to live near her. You can coach by Skype, by, you know, phone. You can do coaching, right?
That's right. That's right.
Do you have
it
a hat,
works.
Coach Suzette, on it?
Do I have a what?
A little
no.
cap saying Coach Suzette?
No, I don't.
Maybe I'll get you one of those, Suzette,
oh,
for the holidays. I think you need that because you're such
ahead.
An exemplary coach. You're like the best. So I want to thank you again so much for joining us tonight. You know, it's funny how the hour just flies by.
I know.
All of our women, you know, Suzette will be back with us again next month.
Yes.
And always her insight is so appreciated. And Suzette, you always bring such insight into the show with the things that you say. And I really do appreciate it. If any of you need to get in touch with Suzette, if you couldn't get to SuzetteVernon.com, certainly just write to me at Bon K and I'll forward your information to Suzette. So without further ado, I want to wish you having a wonderful, wonderful week. And I'll look forward to when you come back here again next month. And you know I love you.
You know I love you more.
Thank you, Suzette. And I love all of our women who are struggling and who listen to our broadcast. Next week we have a special guest, one of the members from my Straight Wives Club, Deborah Sutton, who has a wonderful book out on finding the clues for having a gay husband. Debbie's done a beautiful job with this book, and she'll be on here again. She's on once before when it came out, but there was so much more to discuss. So Deborah is our guest next Monday night. Eventually, I'll learn the days. And so with that, I'm going to play one of our favorite songs, Blackbird by the Beatles. And good night, Suzette.
Good night. Good night, radio listeners.
Good night, radio listeners, too. Bye-bye.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the line of a dark black night. For this moment to arrive.